I often tell my patients when I discover a melanoma in situ that even though this is a bad diagnosis, it makes your dermatologist want to dance because it wasn't an advanced melanoma. Advanced melanoma includes metastatic and unresectable disease. In our final dialogue, Dr. Delphine Lee and Dr. Christine Coe discuss the new therapies for advanced melanoma and elucidate some truly great advances that are now available for our patients.
My name is Christine Coe, and today I'm interviewing Delphine Lee, who is a dermatologist at the John Wayne Cancer Institute and Director of Translational Immunology. So welcome to Dr. Delphine Lee.
Thank you.
So Dr. Lee is going to talk today about advanced melanoma. And so one of the first questions I wanted to ask her is, what are the stages of advanced melanoma, just to sort of get us all on the same page?
Yeah, so the term advanced melanoma really doesn't have clear cutoffs. It doesn't refer to a stage or FDA definitions. But advanced melanoma typically includes the stages of melanoma where you are unable to completely clear the disease and you're unable to maintain local regional control. So that would include even lesions that are high-risk lesions that have not yet spread, but just have a high risk of recurrence. So that would be thicker melanomas, such as the stage 2B and 2C levels. 2B would be either greater than 2 millimeters breast low depth and ulcerated, all the way to anything thicker than that and greater than 4 millimeters unulcerated. Beyond that, for a dermatologist, I think we all feel that advanced melanoma is something that's spread. So if it's gone beyond the skin, it's advanced. Mm-hmm. And so that would be then all of stage 3 disease, which is then lymph node involvement. And then the subsets of stage 3 depend on how many lymph nodes are involved. Or stage 3 could also include no nodes involved, but in transit skin metastases. And then lastly, of course, everyone would agree that advanced melanoma would include metastatic disease, in which you now have the tumor spread all over the body systemically. And what's interesting is that depending on the site of spread, you have higher and higher risk of death and poor prognosis. So these are labeled in the metastatic coding as M1A, M1B, and M1C. All of these are in stage 4 with any level of Breslow thickness and any number of nodal involvement in the regional lymph node where the primary lesion was. So M1A stages involve skin and lymph node, but these are at distant sites. So they could be nodular dermal lesions on the other side of the body from where the primary was, or a lymph node basin in another location. If you had your primary on the right arm, it would be in the left axillary node. Those have the best prognosis. And then M1B involves lung. And lung is actually the most common site for metastasis at any stage of stage 3 disease. And then that has the second worst prognosis. And then finally, the poorest prognosis is M1C, and that's visceral involvement, which would include brain, liver, or colon, or any other visceral site. What trumps all of these, though, is an elevated LDH. We don't understand why. LDH possibly could be a reflection of high cell turnover, which reflects tumor cells proliferating rapidly and then also dying when they run out of resources to continue to survive. And with a rapid turnover of cells, rapid proliferation, you may have higher LDH levels that spills over into the blood. And so an elevated LDH actually automatically also is considered an M1C stage.
So I think talking about advanced melanoma is particularly relevant right now because there are new current therapies out there for advanced melanoma, whereas in the past, nothing seem to work particularly well for the vast majority of patients. So can you talk a little bit about some of the new therapies that are currently out there?
Yeah, so there has been a lot of excitement since the approval of two new drugs in 2011, and they've gotten a lot of press and a lot of coverage at all the academic meetings. And the two drugs that you're referring to are for the treatment of metastatic disease, stage 4 disease, or unresectable lower stages of disease. And these are ipilimumab, which is a drug that approaches the disease by enhancing the patient's own immune system to fight the tumor. And then vemurafenib, which is a drug that targets a special subset of melanomas that have the BRAF mutation. And a large percentage of melanomas have the BRAF mutation. If the BRAF mutation is present, then vemurafenib is able to inhibit that target molecule to prevent the tumor from proliferating. The whole BRAF MAP kinase ERK pathway is important for melanoma tumors that have the BRAF mutation to have that proliferative on signal. Targeting that mutated BRAF then causes the tumor to no longer be able to divide. However, tumors are very plastic, and so they tend to mutate. So the problem with vemurafenib is that though there is this practically miraculous recovery very early on, the patients recur. So what we're going to see coming up will be combination therapies, and the big questions will be how to combine various therapies, combinations of targeted therapy or combinations of targeted therapy with therapies that enhance a person's immune response, in addition to the usual modalities that are being used, surgical approaches and even radiation.
So ipilimumab versus vemurafenib, I know now you mentioned that probably movement towards combination therapy is what's happening, but at least in ipilimumab versus vemurafenib, were there particular subsets that people with advanced melanoma, those two drugs were used in, or was it just sort of whoever was in the trials, they just got randomly kind of put on?
Well, so for vemurafenib, people have to have the mutation in mm-hmm. BRAF, mm-hmm. and that would allow them to be eligible for the trial. For ipilimumab, it would be also people who fit the criteria for mm-hmm. the trial, which would be stage 4 disease or unresectable disease.
Okay. So only about 60% of melanomas have the BRAF mutation, right? So probably the ones who didn't have that mutation would be more likely to get the ipilimumab.
And it also just depends on the medical oncologist that the patient saw, whether okay. that medical oncologist has particular trials that they're involved in. Right. So that actually speaks to the importance for the dermatologist being what I consider the primary care doctor of the patient for the melanoma disease, that we really communicate and know our medical oncologists as well as our surgical oncologists and radiation oncologists, and to know their styles of practice, to know the trials that they have access to. There are also some surgical trials. There are other current therapies being investigated that we don't get much exposure to. There are also therapies that are used, for example, in in-transit metastatic melanoma. There are therapies such as intralesional BCG, which is still on the NCCN guidelines. There's not level one evidence for some of these therapies, but there's anecdotal level of evidence at the level 2 or 2B level. For intralesional BCG, for topical imiquimod, we reported recently a small case series of patients with in-transit metastatic melanoma in the skin that were treated with a combination of intralesional BCG and topical imiquimod. Of course, these treatments, such as intralesional BCG and ablative therapies, which is also on the NCCN guidelines, so CO2 laser, these are all, of course, if the in-transit skin metastases are unresectable, because we know clearly that removing the tumor is the best thing with melanoma. So if you cannot excise and patients are unresectable, at the John Wayne Cancer Institute, a lot of resectable metastases are still treated, and then they go on to get adjuvant therapy with the medical oncologist after there is no evidence of disease or they have remaining disease that is not resectable.
So you mentioned in that there are some therapies in development, so you want to kind of be aware with what your medical oncologist has access to. So what are some of those therapies?
So along the same lines, actually, of the two drugs that were recently approved in 2011, there's another category of checkpoint inhibitors. So ipilimumab is what is termed a checkpoint inhibitor because the natural immune response and the natural history of a T-cell activation is that when a T-cell is activated, it starts to proliferate, and at the same time, it actually starts to express on the surface by migrating from intracytoplasmic granules the transmembrane CTLA-4. And the purpose of this is that if you think teleologically, that our immune response is meant to turn on, do its job, fight some type of infection, and then turn off, then it needs some mechanism to turn off. And there are many mechanisms for this, but one that's been exploited using ipilimumab is the fact that a T cell, when turned on, at the same time initiates a program for its turn off later down the line. And so upregulating CTLA-4 allows the T cell to be turned off because CTLA-4 is an inhibitory molecule. It actually competes with another molecule on the T cell surface, CD28, which is required for a T cell to be activated. So when CTLA-4 competes for the ligand that binds CD28, the T cell is then turned off. Now, for some reason, we don't know why, patients with cancer, and it's also true for melanoma, they have some type of immune suppression, and there are probably many mechanisms for this, which is probably why only 10% of patients with ipilimumab are going to respond to the drug so far in the way that we've targeted the patients. But if we could identify different pathways that people have their immune suppression, whether it's a host immune suppression that's inherent in the person's immune response, or whether it's due to some mechanism by the tumor, where the tumor has some type of immune evasive mechanisms that are suppressing the immune system. And for example, this is what brings me to PD-1. So PD-1 is a transmembrane receptor on T cells that also sends a negative signal. And it's also important for turning off the T cells' response at some point to prevent us from getting autoimmune disease or just too much immune activation that could also make us sick. And so what's been shown is that the tumors themselves learn to express the PD-1 ligand, and by engaging the T cells around it, it basically sort of like tags it with a taser gun, so it can no longer do its function and clear the tumor. So the new family of drugs, and there are several that are out now being tested, either target PD-1 on the T cell or PD-1 ligand on another cell. It could be the tumor cell, it may be other cells as well. And it seems that the responses to PD-1 are quite good. There are also side effects, just like in ipilimumab, where you have rash, as in all drugs, and autoimmune diseases, colitis, endocrinopathies. So then along the same lines of that, then other targeted therapies are currently in development. So dabrafenib is also another BRAF inhibitor that is currently in trials and not yet approved, and also an inhibitor of a downstream molecule in the same RAF MAP kinase ERK pathway, which are the MEK inhibitors. And the MEK is a MAP kinase. It's somewhere downstream of BRAF that also contributes to cell cycle proliferation. And so there are studies actually comparing whether a BRAF inhibitor or a BRAF inhibitor in combination with a MEK inhibitor may be better. It appears that patients who are receiving the MEK inhibitor in combination with a BRAF inhibitor have a better response rate, though still at the end it tails off similar to the vemurafenib. So there will be the need for combination therapies or regimens to be developed, the order of therapies to be given to improve what we're doing. But now we're building this toolbox of many more weapons to kill the melanoma.
Great. So you mentioned some of the side effects for ipilimumab and the newer checkpoint inhibitor, the PD-1 and the PD-1 ligand that's in development. And it kind of makes sense since they're checkpoint inhibitors of the immune system, you'll get autoimmune diseases. So what about vemurafenib and maybe the newer dabrafenib that's in development? What side effects are associated with those medicines?
So the most important side effect that's relevant for us as dermatologists is the development of keratoacanthoma type squamous cell carcinomas. So it's important, and it pulls us back into the management of these patients who do have advanced disease, that we still, in addition to doing their general skin exams to monitor for second primaries or for recurrence of disease, to also monitor these patients for squamous cell carcinoma. We know that adding the MEK inhibitor, actually now seem in the combination therapy of a BRAF inhibitor and the MEK inhibitor, we no longer see as many of these tumors arising, these squamous cell carcinomas arising. But for those that are on single therapy alone, we should certainly pay attention. And always these patients can develop other rashes.
So, right. So, I think, though, as you mentioned, the RAF inhibitors, vemurafenib, and it sounds like also dabrafenib, both have side effects of cutaneous squamous cell carcinomas or maybe keratoacanthomas, acanthomas, and then various rashes, which does seem like you mentioned in recent literature, it seems like maybe rashes with acantholysis and or sort of a follicular prominence type of rash. So do you have any last thoughts for our listeners?
Well, there are many things that are available, and that is melanomaprognosis.org that allows us in a very, very efficiently to enter in some patient information and also a site that we could simply direct our patients to learn more about the prognosis of their disease. Because part of that whole process of learning that you have cancer is the exploration and the education to make sure that you, the patient, know that you've done everything you can to collect all the information that you need and to have trust in the physicians who are taking care of you. And that whole journey and that whole process is part of what is their treatment, not just the treatment itself. And that's what makes us better healers, because we're hearing a lot at this meeting about all the technology that's available that'll make us better diagnosticians and all these trials that are happening and all these new drugs that are out there. But none of them work 100% of the time in 100% of the people. And so there is all this discussion that needs to happen. And as dermatologists being the primary physician, helping the patients as a partner in facing something very scary, that's where we get to practice the art of medicine. A dermatoscope can't do any of that. It can help us come up with the diagnosis, but the way that we could actually take care of our patients better is, even though we've got a waiting room full of people, we can take a little bit of time to share with them the knowledge that we have. We don't have to be at the level of a medical oncologist, but to know more about advanced melanoma gives the patients some reassurance also, and gives ourselves reassurance that we have the knowledge base that's needed to help guide them, consult with them, and then put everything into perspective when we sit down and try to figure out what are the risk-benefit of all these different options that are available to them. And that's what will help us be better physicians.
Well, thank you very much for spending the time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
In the United States, the incidence of advanced melanoma continues to rise and will account for an estimated 9,700 deaths in 2014. 2011 was a year of pivotal advancements for the treatment of advanced melanoma with the FDA approval of two novel agents, vemurafenib and ipilimumab. Currently, there are four FDA-approved treatments for advanced melanoma that stem from a sophisticated and growing understanding of the immune and molecular milieu of melanoma. These include three targets of the MAPK pathway: BRAF inhibitors vemurafenib and dramafenib, and MEK inhibitor trametinib, in addition to an anti-cytotoxic T-lymphocyte antigen 4 monoclonal antibody, ipilimumab. The MAPK pathway is a target for treatment, given that the majority of melanomas possess a mutation in the pathway, most commonly in BRAF, NRAS, or less likely NF1. Vemurafenib was the first BRAF inhibitor to gain FDA approval, with pivotal trials illustrating patients with a specific mutation of V600E, illustrating an overall survival benefit of 13.6 months versus 9.7 months with the traditional chemotherapeutic agent dacarbazine. Subsequent work has proved that vemurafenib can be used to treat additional BRAF mutations of V600K and V600R. Dabrafenib, a second BRAF inhibitor, which recently gained FDA approval in 2013, has illustrated similar results to vemurafenib and seems to portend a low risk for cutaneous photosensitivity compared to vemurafenib. Other common adverse events of BRAF inhibitors can include cutaneous squamous proliferations, hyperkeratotic and painful hand and foot skin reactions, acantholytic and follicular cutaneous eruptions, fatigue, and arthralgias. MEK is downstream from BRAF in the MAPK pathway, and MEK inhibitor trametinib recently gained FDA approval in 2013 for advanced melanoma and has shown a response rate of 22% compared to 8% in chemotherapy patients with BRAF mutations. Adverse effects of MEK inhibition have included included acneiform eruptions, alopecia, cirrhosis, and paronychia. Combination therapy of BRAF and MEK inhibition with dabrafenib and trametinib has been granted accelerated approval through the FDA, given greater response rate and progression-free survival benefits versus monotherapy with dabrafenib. Of note, fewer cutaneous issues were seen with combination therapy compared to monotherapy. Pursuing the immune system in targeted advanced melanoma therapy is currently accomplished via ipilimumab. This anti-CTLA-4 antibody works by releasing the brakes of T-cell suppression and has shown increased survival in melanoma patients. The side effect profile is related to the heightened immune state and can include colitis, hypophysitis, dermatitis, and cutaneous depigmentation. Future treatments include optimization of combination therapies and exploration of additional targets, specifically monoclonal antibodies against immune factors such as programmed death 1, or PD-1, and programmed death ligand 1, or PD-L1. While great advancements have been achieved in the treatment for advanced melanoma over the past years, much work lies ahead to combat issues of resistance, providing sustained results, and patient-specific targeted therapies. I hope you enjoyed the special Skin Cancer Edition this month, and I hope you have made plans to get involved in a skin cancer awareness project in your community. Remember, Melanoma Monday is May 5th. Next month, we look forward to 3 new dialogues on connective tissue diseases, advances in nail therapy, and challenging cases in consultative dermatology. This has been Terry Cronin with Dialogues in Dermatology. Stay passionate about dermatology and keep up all the great work you're doing on behalf of your patients. Your expertise and your commitment to patient care is truly priceless. Have another great month.